we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 31st, 2017. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
Thanks for listening, everyone. World Rat Day is coming up soon on April the 4th, and today is our rat appreciation show dedicated to humans and their rat companions. We have three human rat aficionados here in the station, plus one little rodent named Hikari. Gerald Rennie, Magda Romano, and Veronica Salix will be joining us in a discussion today to tell us about their lives with rats, and will be sharing stories of love, rescue, and companionship with their furry little friends. Also, we have a short interview with another rat companion and rescuer, Lizzie O'Sullivan, who will be telling us about the upcoming Ratapalooza event in Seattle tomorrow. Plus, we'll share with us some information about her work with the Small Animal Rescue Society and fostering and adopting rats. Finally, we will have an interview with Dr. Joanna Makowska, who is an animal biologist who led a study last year to examine the cognitive behaviors of rats in a laboratory setting. She will tell us her findings about the welfare of lab rats, and then we will continue with our discussion on the sentience of rats. But first up, today marks the first day of our spring member drive here at Co-op Radio, and Sinead, you have some words to say about that.
Mm-hmm, I do. Well, I started listening to Co-op Radio a number of years ago, and I just get hooked on more shows all the time myself.
I know. You are a big fan of Co-op Radio, even if you weren't part of Animal Voices,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, no, I listened to Animal Voices long before I got involved with the show. And it was one of the first shows that I started listening to on co-op, and eventually I started discovering more and more, and I'm a musician as well, so I've listened to a lot of the music shows, and you can hear your friends playing music. You can hear
Sinead playing music on other shows. Yeah. I've heard you on other shows.
Yes, and my first live radio performance happened right here in this studio on Mark Bignell's Vancouver show, which is on Wednesdays. And yeah, there's so much good stuff, and it's all it's all volunteer. It's all supported by listeners, and so that's what the Spring Member Drive is about, is encouraging people to get involved. And yeah, you know, if you're not a regular listener to Co-op Radio, I swear, I plan my house cleaning and stuff around what
Jen
shows are going
on. Jen does that too.
On.
She listens to the podcast, because you can hear all of the past shows on co-opradio.org, even if they're not podcasted separately onto mm-hmm. other websites.
Yeah.
You can hear all of our past shows on animalvoices.org and at iTunes as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, there's so much good stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else. And there are a few, there are a number of radio stations around Vancouver who do lots of different things, but I don't think there's any one that is quite like Co-op Radio. So we encourage you to become a member. Every time you listen, then you can know that you are part of keeping this station going and keeping all this going. You can become a member by any donation. You can donate through the website, but we're encouraging people to consider sustaining memberships, which means that you donate a small amount every month. It's suggested $5. You know, it's something, if you aren't even going to notice it at the end of the month, we can just take $5 out of your bank account.
That's what I do. Mm-hmm. $5 every month. And yeah, you don't notice it. It's such a small amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that really, that helps the station It cuts down on the paperwork, for one thing. We don't have to be chasing people down. We have a reliable source of funds to keep this station
and it gives
going.
Us more time to work on Animal Voices itself, because we are all volunteer run. Sinead, myself, Jen, Elise, everyone who works on the show, we're all volunteers here at Co-op Radio, and we work really hard. I know I worked really hard preparing the show today. It's all on volunteer person power.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the great things about the station. You know, you can get involved in so many ways. And we're actually having a birthday party for Co-op Radio at the Wise Hall tonight.
That's another way to get involved.
Mm-hmm. That's another way to get involved. Come party.
And see Sinead play beginning.
Yeah. See some live music. There's some great bands that are going to be playing. Jeff Burner is playing. Old Soul Rebel is playing. Mad Rhythm, I think, is playing. and there's an open mic beforehand. I'll be singing a couple of tunes. Some other programmers and listeners and people are playing tunes. And it's a good time. It's always a good time at the Wise Hall. And it's always a good time with the Co-op Radio crew. So you can come out to that. You can donate and become a member there at the Wise Hall tonight. You can do it online, or you can call the studio right now or
the
after
station
the
office.
Show. The station office at 604-684-8494. And Pam will be there to take your calls now or after our show. Or you can go online, cooperadio.org, and donate, become a member through there.
Well, thank you so much for that. And yes, please do remember to support Animal Voices on Co-op Radio. We really, really appreciate your support.
In a world where radio is everything, none but the chosen few or anyone who buys a membership can gain entrance into the uber, ultra, super secret inner sanctum of Vancouver Co-op Radio. And not since the early times in the 1970s has the opportunity arisen, except for pretty well every single day since the 1970s, for the common person to join the near 1,200 strong that make up Vancouver Co-op Radio. Only those with the skills to operate a computer or a phone, or for the brave few show up in person, will have the opportunity to join our quest in bringing diverse and inclusive programming to the masses. A perilous journey, not for the faint of heart. But if you have a faint heart, you can still join, because we're all inclusive. Are you up to the task? Do you have what it takes? Find out by going to cooperadio.org. Your future awaits.
As I mentioned before, this is our Rat Appreciation Show today in honor of World Rat Day coming up on April the 4th. And to celebrate this day, I wanted to get to know rats. And I think they are a widely misunderstood creature, but that is changing. But as there is a growing subculture of people who enjoy having rats as their companions, just like a dog or a cat. Today, here in the studio, we have three of those human rat companions, plus one furry little friend. And I'd like to welcome you all on the show today. Hello, Gerald, Magda, and Veronica.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Great to have you. Thanks for coming on the show today for our Rat Appreciation Show. So I'm really interested to start by learning all of your stories. And let's start with you, Magda. How did you start your journey with having rats in your lives and having rats as lifelong friends?
Well, for me, it started in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s. And honestly, I think the first rat I ever got was just to be cool, just to have a rat. I knew them because back then I actually worked at pet stores, because I assumed that if you were an animal lover, you would work at a pet store. That's not the case. And they had them there, and I thought they were kind of cool, so I got one. And that first rat, JD, I remember him to this day, and he just changed my outlook on these animals. I mean, I love all animals, and I, you know, never hated rats, but I had no idea how intelligent they were, how bonded they become with you. And once I had that first rat, that was it. I've had rats ever since, and it's been a good, 20 something years. I love them, and my kids love them, and I've always had them pretty much since then.
And how about you, Jerry? How did your journey start with having rats as companions?
First of all, I'd like to say hi to all my friends and family and my coworkers.
Great. Are they listening?
Yes, they are.
Perfect.
I hope their day finds them well, and I hope they enjoy the broadcast. But anyhow, I am a published author of 3 books. My first experiences with rats started when I was very young. I was around 3 years old, and I had an encounter with a rather large rat, and I was living with my parents in Halifax, and for a time I was quite terrified of them. But that changed, and in the Rat Worshipper, the latter part of my book, I go into a dramatic fashion in the incident in which me and my family's lives were saved as a result of the insistent efforts of...
Is that based on a true story?
Yes.
Can you tell us about that story? How was your life saved by a rat?
Well, I don't want to go into any spoiler alerts or anything like that. But all I can say is that it was as a result of the insistent efforts of a pet rat I had named Ben. And there's a recollection of events that fateful night. I can fully understand perceptions that rats came into my life for a reason. So ever since that day, I've had rats ever since, and they're just such they're amazing animals.
Can I ask you why you said rats came into your life for a reason? I do believe that resonates with me. I believe everything happens for a reason, and that the people and animals and other creatures that come into our lives are there for a reason, and often we'll have companions and we'll say, like, I can't imagine my life without you. So yeah. Why is it that you think that rats came into your life for a reason? What was that reason?
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm here. I've written a few books, and I think that's maybe what those reasons were, to show people that just how friendly and social and intelligent and how bonded these animals can become to their caretakers.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to hear more about that later on in the show. Yes.
Veronica, how about you? How did you get involved with rats?
Well, first off, I just want to say thank you for including me in today. Well, I was 21 when I was first introduced to rats. One of my friends had rats, and I went over, and she just kind of plopped a rat down on my lap. And I'm like, I just was frozen because I was never been around rats. And I'm like, I don't know what to do here. I didn't really bond well because I still had a lot of stigma that I had to break through, but I knew that they were beautiful animals. I didn't hate them or anything like that. And then I started working at a golf course, and we have a lot of poison traps around. And my next introduction to, like, wild rats is finding a rat that I thought was dead, and then when I went to pick up the body, he was still breathing, and I now had to, like, finish the job. And it was just terrible, and it kept happening year after year until a few years ago I ended up finding a baby whose mother had been killed by poison. Now, this baby was still alive. Obviously, had been poisoned too. And I tried to see if I'd save the baby. Baby died. And then after that, I was like, I feel like I want to have some rats in my life to honor this one that passed away. So I started looking into rescues to bring in rats into my life. So I'm a new rat owner. I've had 3. 2 have already passed. I still have 1 brother left, and they're just beautiful. And I'm going to be looking to adopt another one to continue on, because they're such beautiful animals.
Hmm. So you live with 2 cats as well, don't you?
I do. I was kind of scared to bring them in because so many people are like, I've got cats, I can't have rats. And that's what I thought first. And now I'm like, no, actually, we can. They can coexist. I mean, my one cat kind of wants to pounce on them. But, like, the first day I brought him home, my one rat kind of walked up to my one cat. Well, my cat came over to inspect. And then my rat just ran, like, right up, stood on his hind legs, and went right up to her nose. And she was like, whoa, you're pretty brave. I don't know about you.
So your rat was inspecting your cat as well, is that right?
Yeah, and it freaked out my cat.
Magda, I understand you have a household of varied animals. And actually, I don't think we mentioned this, but you have insights into other parts of animal rescue as well. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. You've started an animal shelter.
Yeah, I'm a co-founder and president of Katie's Place in Maple Ridge, which is a cat shelter. And I also volunteer at Hearts on Noses, which is a pig shelter.
And we had them on the show recently. Yes, you can look that up on our podcast.
Yes, awesome place, both awesome places. So I tend to have a house full of rescued animals at any given time. The rule kind of in my house is get along. There's no, you know.
No other option?
No, there isn't, because no one's ever going to be removed, so they have to get along. Or
What are the varieties of animals you have in your house?
I have, at the moment, 3 dogs, 2 cats, a bunny, 6 rats, fish, and chickens.
And they all get along.
They're all buddies. They do. Yeah. And I think it's because my dogs and my cats, because they do tend to live longer, are just so used to me coming home with these small animals and saying, you know, here, be nice. And they are. They've lost all interest. I have a dog that I actually adopted who was apparently high prey drive. And she, within 6 months, I mean, you know, she hangs out with the chickens now outside. So, yeah, that's basically it. And the rats, they do. They come over, they inspect. They don't seem to be afraid of the other animals. And the other animals tend to usually be the ones that back off.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, Jerry, you had mentioned before that you've written 3 books about rats. And you wanted to read a little excerpt from one of your books. Would you like to share that with us now?
Sure. Which one would you want to hear from?
I don't know. That would be up to you.
Okay.
You can surprise us.
I do have part 1 of the Rat Chronicles, which I published a few years back. And here's a little intro here. And just to give you an example of the first page, let's see. Commander Benson drives his vehicle into the parking lot of NASA headquarters. The radio in his car is playing Creedence Clearwater Revival's Bad Moon Rising while he finds an empty spot to park his vehicle. The song comes to its conclusion before he turns off the ignition key and then proceeds inside the building where he meets up with Lieutenant Commander Bishop. Good morning, Commander Benson. How are you today? Yes, Lieutenant Commander Bishop. I did not sleep too well last night. You know the mission and the recent developments. I understand, Commander. There's been some interesting debate about that distortion in space behind the moon. How long has it been there now? And yeah, the reason I picked Bad Moon Rising is because the lyrics kind of reflect the storyline in my book. So that's kind of an interesting opener to the first part of the story.
And this is a sci-fi story that, it, like, are all the characters rats?
Well, no.
Okay.
The rats actually don't come into play until about chapter 4, where Kirak comes into play. And, yeah. Chapter 4. The Rats of Kirak. I guess the start of this one starts as, while the men put their equipment into the cube van from where they are stored, there is a sudden commotion from one of the soldiers outside. He's preparing to disembark in the vehicle assigned to him. The others run outside to investigate. He's standing behind the jeep, seen with a flamethrower in his hands, aimed at the jeep, shouting in a thick British accent. Private Uptown. God damn it, L, I hate rats. Stand down, Private, Major Holden said. That is a piece of government property you're about to fire upon, and we need it for transport. Did you say rats? Yes, sir. Right there in the back of the jeep, sir. There are dozens of the little buggers. Get out of the jeep so I can torch you vermin. Come on out. Come and get me. I'm ready for you. And then there's another chapter here.
Is there going to be a happy ending for the rats there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I wouldn't have written the book there wasn't going to be a happy ending.
Okay.
And then the first time Kirak speaks, it's through telepathy. Fear not, for we bring you no harm. And then a few seconds later, one of the rats climbs to the top of the rear seat of the jeep and faces him. Greetings. I am what you call the Alpha of our clan. You may address me as Kirak, as you address each other by name. You are wondering why we can communicate with you in this way. Well, Yeah, and then it goes on where it really kind of gets bizarre after that, and it's some really crazy science fiction.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us. Yeah. I'm not into sci-fi myself, yeah. So that was an interesting little introduction. Yeah. Now, I wanted to talk about one person who I wanted to have on the show here. She is very involved in the rat companion and rescue community in the Lower Mainland. Her name is Lizzie O'Sullivan. She couldn't be here today because she is on her way to Seattle right now to attend an event this weekend called Ratapalooza, which I know you are attending as well, Jerry. So yes. I did the short interview with her last weekend to find out more about Ratapalooza, her story, and her rescue work with the Small Animal Rescue Society of BC. Hi, Lizzie. Welcome to Animal Voices.
Thank you.
I'm really excited to talk to you about just rats and rat culture, or a rat subculture, I guess you could call it. So to start off with, how did you become a rat person? And can you tell us about how that all evolved to what you're doing now these days with rats and rat rescue?
Sure. When I was about 15, I got a summer job working in a lab, and it was basically cleaning out the rat cages. And they were doing some experiments on some of the rats, and then some of the rats were in a control group and nothing was happening to them. And one day I went in and they said, "You don't need to come in tomorrow because we're euthanizing all the rats." And I was a little horrified and I said, "Well, what about the ones in the control group that nothing's been done to? Like, they're absolutely fine and I've made friends with them all." I didn't say that, but I had. So they said, "Oh, well, you know, whenever an experiment is over, we just euthanize them all and start over with new rats." And I'm like, "So in a couple of days, you can come back and there'll be new rats here." So I went home that night with the six rats in the control group and never went back. So they became my first pet rats. And being lab rats, they couldn't catch some of the common diseases that domestic rats have now. And so they lived to be quite, I think I was in college by the time the last one passed away. So, yeah, that was my start with rats.
How long ago was that? I'm curious.
Oh, yes. Well, that's such a question. Let's put it this way. I was 15 then, and I'm 67 now.
Wow, I had no idea. That's a lifelong love of rats. So I bet you have a lot of stories to tell that you have to come back next year for next year's Rat Appreciation Show, because this year you're actually busy at Ratapalooza in Seattle, which is happening this weekend. And I want to know about that as well. So what is Ratapalooza, and what is, like, how does something like that come to be about? I understand there's also a rat fanciers club that you're a part of. Perhaps you could just talk to me about that and how rat lovers all converge together in the Pacific Northwest to, I guess, what do? Celebrate rats?
Yes, pretty much. The main goal of the club, which was founded in year 2000, is to host shows and sort of educate the public about rats, about how great they are as pets, how the best way is to take care of them. We have rescue tables at the shows where there are rescues that have rats up for adoption. And we have talks, some by vets, some by experienced rat people, on all kinds of aspects of rat care and rat health care. And then for the show part, which is what draws in the members of the public, we have all kinds of crazy contests like best costume, kissiest rat, longest tail. The whole thing is supposedly family fun, but with a view to educate people at the same time.
How many people show up to Ratapalooza?
You know, the very first Ratapalooza I was at, the novelty of it and all, there must have been thousands.
Really?
That went. Yeah.
So these are all people that have, like I said, like they've converged together with their common love for rats. Is that really what it's about? Like, what is the scene out there like? And it must be, a lot of it must be online as well. Like, I understand there's various Facebook groups for rat lovers and rat companions. Can you tell me what that is all about and how you all sort of bond together as a community, I guess?
Well, when we first started the club, it was pre-Facebook, obviously, and we started out in a Yahoo group. And the main purpose of the Yahoo group was to plan and organize the events. But of course, that grew into something a little more, with rat lovers exchanging ideas and exchanging information and exchanging cute photos and videos. And I guess when Facebook came along, we moved that group from the Yahoo group. Well, we actually still have the Yahoo group going, but most of the action does happen on Facebook now. Yeah, that's how we all met. And I've actually made some lifelong friends through that group, and a lot of them live in the United States, so I'm a frequent traveler down there. I go to all U.S. shows.
So I'm assuming you have rats. Do you travel with your rats across the border?
Yes.
And that's like, is your rat just sort of perched on your shoulder, and the border guard is no problem?
No,
okay. So speaking of your rat friends, how many rats do you have these days, and what are their names and what are they like?
Oh my goodness. What are their names? okay. Well, I have 14 rats of my own at the moment. Wow, that's actually down from, I think my all-time high was close to 90. And that was when I was first involved in rescue, and things started to get a bit out of control. I guess we must have had a really big rescue come in. I've learned a thing or two since then about how to get them into foster homes instead of bringing them all home to my house.
Right.
But now I'm just working towards downsizing a bit through natural attrition. So what I have now is I have 7 dwarf rats and 7 regular-sized rats. Most of them are pedigreed rats from breeders, although I have one that is a half-wild rat that I got from the Small Animal Rescue in BC, and that's, I call her my Wild Irish Rose. And I have another that I got from Best Friend Rodent Rescue in Washington, and he's a pink-eyed white lab rat, so I couldn't resist, since my very first rats were pink-eyed white lab rats. And his name is Wampa, after the monster in Star Wars on the planet Hoth. I do have a bit of, my rattery is Sith rattery, so I do have a little bit of a Star Wars theme to my rats and to some of my rat names.
So do all of your 14 rats get along well together? Because I know that there can sometimes be issues there with mixing and intermingling rats that come from different areas.
Not everybody does, but I keep my dwarf rats separate from my regular size rats. And that's just because I've had a few bad experiences with the larger rats picking on the small ones. But it can totally depend on the rat, because I certainly know people who keep regular size rats and dwarf rats together. So right now, all of my large rats, they do seem to get along quite well together. All my females are spayed, so that takes that problem off the table. With the dwarf rats, I'm a little nervous about spaying dwarf rat females because they are so small.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have to keep my 2 females separate from the males.
So I'm interested in knowing about your rescue work with SARS. It's a small animal rescue group that's local here in BC. So I know that yesterday, for example, there was a rescue situation of some domesticated rats. Can you maybe tell us about that, or what a typical rescue situation would look like for rats that you are involved with?
We've had a report of somebody that had domestic rats out in their shed, and they were hooded rats. So not wild rat colored. And so they were very sure that someone had let their domestic rats loose and they were out in the shed. And she was pretty sure that they were all males and she hadn't seen any wild rats. And well, we went out there and we trapped 3 babies. And the babies looked like wild rat, domestic rat hybrids. So chances are they're not going to make good pets. However, one of them was hooded. He was white and brown. So we're probably going to have to keep that one because he's probably not going to do well in the wild. But the two brown ones, we probably will, when they're old enough, just let them go. What we think might have happened, apparently the homeowner did some trapping on her own and she caught some rats that she thought were wild rats and took them some distance away and let them go. And we think that one of them might have been the mother of these babies because they're very young babies. So that's why we decided to keep them rather than let them go. And we'll very possibly let them go when they're a little bit older and able to fend for themselves. So this particular situation, it will be ongoing and we will continue to try to trap rats from that situation and hope that we can get the domestic ones for sure.
So what I'm understanding here is that there's two kinds of rats. There's the domesticated rats that people have used for pets, and then there's wild rats that can be also seen as a problem. So how does SARS get involved with whether it's a wild rat or a domesticated rat? It seems like you're involved with any type of situation, and then you kind of decide like how to proceed from there. Is that correct?
Well, in this case, I mean, this was an unusual situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this just might, I mean, it was the first for me to have to deal with.
Okay.
So.
I know a lot of companion animal owners will give up their animals to SARS. Is that where a lot of rats would be abandoned to?
SARS actually tries not to take in owner surrenders. We mainly work with stray rats like these ones.
Oh, okay.
That are out in the field, or if somebody, sometimes you have people who are mentally ill who end up having rats in their house and are domestic rats I'm talking, and they get loose and they breed at will, and the next thing you know they have an out of control situation of domestic rats in their house. So that's another situation where we might step in and help. We take transfers from places like community animal shelters and from the SPCA sometimes, you know, when they get a large number of rats in.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to people just calling us up and saying, I have rats and I can't keep them anymore, will you take them? We just don't have the capacity to deal with situations like that. So what we'll normally do is explain to them ways that they can rehome their pets on their own.
Right. And speaking of rehoming at SARS, you're probably, as you said, you're at capacity there. Can you talk about the mandate of SARS with regards to, I know you work with fostering and adopting out animals. So if people want rats, I would think that rather than breeding them, why don't you just get them from a small animal rescue society? Is that what you advocate there?
That is definitely what we promote.
Okay. So for anyone listening, how would they go about becoming a foster even for a rat?
The Small Animal Rescue website will have all of that information on it, how to contact us. I can give you the email if you'd like. It's sarsrats@gmail.com. And people can contact us there and ask any questions they might have about adopting. We also have our adoption application linked to our website and quite a bit of information on the website explaining what the adoption policies are. So I think that is probably the best point of contact, is just to go to the website.
Okay, and then just one more point that I wanted to talk about. You were saying before that you used to host an annual rat show in BC for many years called Ratstravaganza. I guess that's sort of like the Ratapalooza that's happening in Seattle. But you said that you are looking for a new volunteer organizer, and it's a lot of work. Everyone knows it, but we're here on the radio and we're broadcasting far and live. So would you like to use this opportunity to make a plug for if anyone's interested in hosting a local Ratstravaganza here in BC?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, I did it for many years, and I have, you know, made a lot of contacts and a lot of notes on how to do it. And I would be so happy to assist someone and support them. And I know that there are many other people in the Pet Rat community that would also pitch in and help. So, you know, if all we really need is one spearhead person to take charge.
Mm-hmm. I definitely know how that goes. So thank you so much for joining us today to speak about your involvement with the rat companion and rescue culture here in BC, and have a great time at Ratapalooza. And if people want to learn more about how you can rescue or foster a rat, you can go to smallanimalrescuesociety.org. Thank you, Lizzie, and happy World Rat Day.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Allison.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
All right, now for some news. Some news that's been going around Vancouver this week has been about Canuck the Crow. Many people have heard of Canuck the Crow, celebrated for his gregarious antics.
He lives around here, around the radio station.
Yes, he does. He lives around here. And last weekend, he was hit with a stick, apparently, while hopping along the sidelines of a local soccer game. Somebody apparently hit him with a flagpole over the head. And he'll be in the hospital, in a bird hospital, for at least another week after his caretaker, Sean Bergman, has said that he'll be in the hospital. They're raising money for the funds. The BCSPCA has said that an investigation was started after receiving reports that he was knocked unconscious, but no one who has witnessed the attack has come forward yet. Sean Bergman befriended Canuck more than a year ago, and the antics of this curious bird led to a Facebook page with thousands of followers and a dedicated social media presence. So Canuck spends a lot of time with humans, but he's not a pet, and he must feed and fend for himself. So they're waiting till he's 100% ready to go back outside before they let him go.
I understand that Sean did raise him as a baby, but then let him go. And I've seen a video of Canuck, who enjoys to ride on the windshield of Sean's car and taking a ride down the hill.
Yeah, they've really become friends.
So speaking of unlikely animal companions, the theme of today's show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So best wishes for Canuck, and that's just really unfortunate. Someone would just hit him. Like, we don't
Absolutely.
Really know the details, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll find out more in the future.
And there has been a lot of public outcry about this. People have been, you know, sending him money and everything. But I'd like to quickly point out that, of course, Canuck is a great example of how humans will sympathize with an individual animal who's been given a name. Meanwhile, the slaughterhouse at Commercial Drive and Hastings Street, you know, birds get needlessly abused and killed on a daily basis. So if you find yourself concerned for the well-being of Canuck, please do consider extending your compassion to all birds and choose plant-based products when possible instead of eggs, poultry, or other products derived from needless animal suffering.
And we have time for one more quick story.
Yes,
there's something really important that happened this week.
Here is the commercial seal hunt started this week. It started early, 2 weeks early on March 28th, even though there are mother seals that are likely still nursing their pups. Sealing areas are closed hunting on March 15th to allow time for seal whelping and nursing, but that's not enough for the seals. Canada's commercial seal hunt is the largest slaughter of marine mammals on Earth. Lots of cruelty involved. There is another side of the story. There's an issue of Inuit communities being affected by campaigns against the seal hunt. And we don't have time to get into it in this particular show, but we will post on our Facebook page a piece written by a former Animal Voices contributor, Darren Chang, about a 2016 documentary called Angry Enoch, which talks about these issues. So please do check that out.
Well, thank you for the news, Sinead. And getting back to our discussion with Rat Companions for World Rat Day. This is our Rat Appreciation Show. We have in the studio here Rat Companions Gerald Rennie, Magda Romano, and Veronica Salix. And we also have another furry little friend here who we haven't met yet. Well, we met her before the show, but I would like a formal introduction, and her name is Hikari. Jerry, you brought Hikari to the station today. Can you tell us a bit about her, speaking of fostering and adopting?
Well, yes, this is just one of several rescues that I've done. There was a woman who got in touch with me through Lizzie saying she couldn't keep her rat anymore, so I took the opportunity to go down and meet with her, and she handed me over Hikari. And she told me that she's around a year and a half. She's not spayed, so I'm glad I didn't let him cavort with Stewie, or she might be pregnant right now. But anyhow, I have done a couple in the past for Lizzie and SARS, a Small Animal Rescue Society, and I was really happy with volunteering my time and effort to rescue these rats and make sure they get loving homes.
And you're going to be taking her down to Ratapalooza this weekend, is that right? To hand her off to someone who's going to adopt her?
That's correct.
Okay. And so Ratapalooza, you must be looking forward to that. You know what? I'm actually going to be in Seattle tomorrow, but for Seattle Veg Fest, and we won't have time to go to Ratapalooza, which is unfortunate. So maybe next year, but maybe I'll see you somewhere in downtown Seattle.
Yes.
So I wanted to talk a little bit more about rescuing because, as we know, a lot of rats are bred, but I believe, and I think this is your philosophy as well, Magda, is adopt, don't shop, right? And why not adopt a little animal in need when there are animals in need. Magda, can you speak about your experiences in rescuing animals? And I think you've been active with SARS as well, right?
Yeah, I actually, the first two rats that I got from SARS, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, were supposed to be fosters. And I brought my two sons with me. They were quite little then. And we're driving back, and I'm explaining the concept of fostering to them. I said, you know, we'll keep them until, we find a home. Well, 20 minutes into the ride home, they were in love with them, and there was no way they were ever going to let them go. So I had to phone Lizzie and say, actually, I'm adopting these two.
That
sorry.
Often happens, doesn't it?
It's called the foster failure, yes.
Right.
I feel very strongly about adopting for all animals. There is always, any kind of animal you pretty much want, you will be able to find somewhere at a shelter. There's specialty groups like SARS for small animals. You don't need to breed bunnies. You don't need to breed rats. You don't need really at this point to do any of it, because there is always animals waiting for homes in rescue. And I think once we really cut on that number of animals that are in rescue, then maybe we can start thinking about, breeding or anything like that. But I mean, at this point, I don't think there would be a shortage of any animal if we completely stopped breeding for the next, 20 years. I think we'd still have animals, waiting for homes and stuff like that. So I really do believe that people need to adopt. Now, my first few rats, I'll admit, I bought. I was quite young. I didn't know much about rescue, but since then, pretty much every rat I've had since I was, let's say about since 15 years ago, has been a rescue. So it's either somebody contacted me and said, take my rat, or it's been through adopting through a rescue somewhere or finding out. I had adopted a rat from the SPCA that had showed up at a local pet store and actually knocked on the door. He was outside. He was shivering. He had been burned by cigarettes.
Wow.
Bosley's, they mentioned him to me, and I shot down to the SPCA, put my name down. I said, I want this rat. I don't care. They're like, oh, well, he's, probably about 4 years old, and he'll be dead soon. Well, I had Snow for probably a good year and a half, 2 years, and he was the most awesome rat ever. And I mean,
I can say we have a photo of you and Snow on our website
yes.
right now, animalvoices.org.
Yes.
And if people are wondering what that noise is in the background, I finally figured out what it is. It's Hikari.
Yes. She's drinking.
She's drinking her water.
She's drinking a lot of of water. Mm-hmm. Maybe, Jerry, just for our listeners who can't see Hikari, so you can't show us Hikari, but maybe you could describe Hikari to us because you know about rats. And I was asking you before, from the very little I know about rats, would Hikari be described as a typical lab bred type rat? But you said no.
No. Lab rats are typically pink-eyed whites, or PEWs.
She's white.
She is actually...
She's cute.
She is actually white, but she has points on her nose and a rear end, making her a Siamese rat. That's her breed. And she's also a dumbo-eared, which means her ears are more on the side of her head. Agoutis have ears more on the top of their head. So that's how you can see the difference between an agouti and a dumbo-eared.
All right. Now, Veronica, I know you said you just have one rat left. Unfortunately, you actually lost one of your rats yesterday, and I know rats don't have a very long lifespan, right? Are you planning to adopt more rats?
Yes, I am. I was actually planning to adopt more before he passed away, mm-hmm. just because, like, his brother... The one that just passed away, his name was Barone. His other brother, McIntosh, he passed away in December. And 6 months after I adopted him, he started with respiratory issues, which is super common in rats. And I kind of figured, because he had ongoing problems, he was going to pass away. And then when Barone just, or well, before Barone passed away, I was like, you know, I think I want to get a couple more, but I'm not quite ready yet. So I'm going to wait a couple months. And then he passed away. So now there's just Bartlett left, and he's just so sad.
Bartlett needs a companion for
sure.
Does. So yeah, I want to talk about that. I think all species want to have companions with their own species, but I've seen so many photos, including yours, Veronica, that you have these, it seems that you have very close emotional bonds with your rats. You had a photo of your rat. I don't know if it was Barone, but I think you just posted yesterday. He was in your, gave him a ride home in your hoodie.
Oh, yeah.
Can you just tell us about just the emotional bonds you have with your rats?
Well, each of them, they all have such different personalities. So Barone, when he was younger, he liked to sit more on my shoulders and stuff. And I didn't totally train them to sit on my shoulders. So that kind of went away after they were probably about 7 months or so. But he likes to give kisses. So if I go over to the cage, he would give me kisses. If I'd stick my hand in, he would start kissing my hands. And he was my personal manicurist, so he'd
I know
he would chew all the dry skin off my hands
I've read your posts, and that's just like it reminds me of fish who groom each other.
Yeah,
so that's actually
big groomers. They love to groom each other.
Yeah, I like to groom people too. It's just like an innate we share common things. Mm-hmm. Right now, Magda, I want to talk about you were talking about before about how rats show so much affection. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Over the years, I've had many rats, and they do vary in their personality. And I've had rats that really wanted very little to do with me because of the circumstances before they came to me. And I have had rats that, how do I say it? I would call them my de-stressors. I would come home. I would take out, I had these two, these were the first two from SARS, Rossi and Vader, and I would nap with them. They would cuddle up in my neck and they would nap with me. They would sit on my shoulders when we drove into town. If I took them outside, which I used to do quite a bit, they would follow me. I'd walk away and they felt safer closer to me. When they got tired of walking around, they would literally... just like a baby kind of, you know, steps up on their mother on the leg, they would do that to me, like, okay, enough, pick us up, we want to go back in. You'd call them. My husband first didn't believe me, but I'd say, like, I'd stand, you know, on the opposite side of the house and call Rossi, and he would come flying. So they're very much like cats and dogs. They can show the same emotions. They do have the same emotions. They have the same bond. They bond with you just like a cat or a dog. And they will be your buddies. I think they're the best pets possible for children, not hamsters or gerbils, which tend to be a little bit more aggressive. But they're calming. They're very calming, and they're very loving animals.
And Jerry, what about you? Why do you think rats make good companions for humans?
Well, I know a family that goes to these Ratapalooza shows. They have an autistic child, and you wouldn't know he had autism because rats really help people with those kind of disabilities. And he's really an intelligent kid. I wouldn't be surprised if he's smarter than me. However, you know, I do find that they are really great de-stressors. You know, after a long day at work, well, I'm on half hours now because of a back injury, but I would go home and sit down in my chair and just let my rats come out and play with me, and they'd kiss me, and, you know,
They like the attention, too.
They love the attention.
Yeah. I think I need some rats in my life. I certainly need some de-stressing. It sounds like a win-win situation when both species can benefit from an enriched mm-hmm. relationship with each other.
Yes. And I think they sense your moods as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, they do.
All animals do.
There was one instance when I was with my brother's, in my brother's trailer while I was waiting for my townhouse purchase to go through. And I was sitting there on my iPad, my rats were out, and I had one on my shoulder, and I saw a post on my iPad that kind of upset me. And then the rat on my shoulder just jumped off my shoulder on top of his cage, and he gave me what looked like a stink eye, as if he's saying, "What the hell are you thinking?"
Yeah, they know.
I was like, okay, I'm sorry. Animals I'm going back to my happy place now.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear about all of these positive relationships that people have with rats as companions, but I also want to acknowledge a large part of our society's relationship with rats, which is using them by the hundreds of thousands every year in Canada for scientific research in labs. There is an animal biologist, however, who is bridging the gap between the use of rats and viewing them more as sentient beings rather than the unfeeling lab subjects purely for scientific use. This biologist is Dr. Joanna Makowska, who has a PhD in animal biology from the Animal Welfare Department at the University of British Columbia. And last year, she led a study of the cognitive behaviors of rats housed in a lab-type setting. In this interview, she tells us about the findings of her study. Hello, Joanna, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, to start, can you give us some background on the history of rats being bred for the use of science experiments in laboratories? How long has this been going on for, and why rats? Why are rats used as a preferred animal to do lab experiments on?
So most of the history between rats and humans actually dates back to the 1800s in London. That was soon after rats arrived in England. And it's also when people started seeing them as vermin because they discovered that rats actually were responsible for some of the bubonic plague. And so the queen at the time, who was Queen Victoria, actually appointed a man that was called Jack Black as Her Majesty Rat Catcher. And this Jack Black's job was to catch and poison rats. So he did that. And he also caught rats and sold them to be used in rat pits where they were killed by dogs in front of an audience. And at the same time, the same Jack Black started noticing that rats had different colors, and he started breeding the rats of different colors, and he sold them as pets. So from the very beginning, you can see that there's this dualistic relationship between humans and rats, where they're seen as both pest and pet. So it was really in this climate of Victorian England that people started doing experiments on rats. And from there on, the rat just became the first mammalian species to be domesticated, primarily for scientific purposes. And the reason that rats and mice caught on as a popular research model is because they're small, they're easy to handle, and they reproduce really quickly.
Wow, that's a great answer. I learned a lot just in that first answer there. So the research that you did studied the behaviors of lab rats, specifically in a laboratory environment. Can you tell us about what the purpose of the study was and describe how it was carried out?
So rats in laboratories are kept in environments that are really restrictive behaviorally. So their cages that they're in are pretty small and they're barren. And that people who work with these rats often claim that these cages are just fine because these rats have been bred in captivity for so long that they have adapted to that environment. So I wanted to challenge that assumption, and I wanted to see how differently these same laboratory bred rats would behave if they were housed in a much more permissive environment. So for that reason, I took laboratory bred rats and I housed them in the large Midwest Critter Nation cages, which are actually really popular with pet rat owners. So in these cages, they could run and they could climb and they could explore. And I also filled the lower portion of the cage with about a foot of soil to see if the rats would construct burrows, the way they do in the wild. So I found that these lab-bred rats indeed dug burrows, and they did that approximately 30 times per day. I also found that the rate that they burrowed didn't decrease as they got older, because I looked at them throughout until they were older than a year. And the fact that they maintain a stable burrowing rate was really interesting, because we know that mammals, just like people, become less active with age. We trade many activities for rest. And so the fact that rats weren't willing to trade burrowing kind of indicates that this is something that's really important to them. I also found that the rats seemed to really enjoy burrowing. Their demeanor when they were burrowing was really excited. They would bound in and out of the burrows as they were digging. And they also kept building burrows and new tunnels, even though the ones that they had built the day before were still there. So I think this finding has implications even for pet rats, because pet rats are really rarely, if ever, given access to burrowing substrates for building tunnels. So I think it's easy for us to disregard how important burrowing might be for rats, because we are land mammals, so it's not really an intuitive concept for us. But the way rats have evolved, burrows are actually like the hub of all their activities. That's where they sleep, that's where they eat, that's where they raise their young, and that's where they retreat for protection. So I think this is something we should really look into, providing both lab and pet rats. Another cool thing that I found is that pet rats stand upright really frequently. And the reason I looked at that is in the typical standard lab cage of rats, the height isn't high enough for rats to be able to stand and stretch. What I found is that once they are provided with the height, they do this behavior about every 4 minutes when they're young, and still about every 9 minutes when they're older. So I think this is a really important finding, and I hope that it pushes regulators to change the current guidelines so that at least the cage height is enough for rats to be able to stand and stretch upright.
So I find it really interesting that these lab rats that have been bred for labs since the 1840s, since hundreds of years ago, their natural behaviors have not been bred out of them. Now, is it of the thought of researchers, scientists, that that's been bred out? And was that surprising to you to discover that they still want to burrow and they still want to carry out natural behaviors and enjoy them?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't surprising to me. I'm familiar with pet rats. If you're familiar with evolution and zoology, it just doesn't make sense that it would have been bred out. But it is indeed an argument that people use time and time again. And there had been a few studies that took lab rats and kind of found that they would burrow, but nobody's actually looked at how much they do of it. So those people who would agree, yeah, maybe it's not bred out, but still it's not really important anymore, would argue, okay, they might burrow, but not a lot. So this study really came and showed that actually they do it a lot and it is important.
Yeah, I understand it was the first study of its type. So perhaps the welfare of these little animals in cages that are kept in hundreds and thousands, I know in Canada, mm-hmm. alone is like, maybe it's something that's worth digging deeper into, just like you did. So as a result of the study, and you have alluded to this already, but what changes do you think needs to be made with regards to the way that researchers interact with and view rats as sentient beings? Is there a lack of empathy displayed towards the rats in the lab environment as there is just with rats in society in general? And what were your conclusions as to how suffering can be alleviated?
It's true that typically, but not always, researchers have little interaction with the rats. I do think that there should be a change in culture with regards to how researchers interact with rats in the lab. I think that positive interaction with humans can be really rewarding to both the rats and humans. And rats generally are viewed as sentient, just less sentient than other species. A lot of research has actually shown that in general, whether we're talking about a member of the public or a researcher, people view rats as less able to experience emotion than other more charismatic species, such as a dog or a chimpanzee. And this belief surely that they're not capable of suffering or of emotions in general does translate into fewer concerns for their welfare. Aside, I guess, from the ethical issues surrounding the use of rats in research, where we breed them and we house them and we use them for our own gains, if we are strictly talking about alleviating suffering within this paradigm, then I think rats could fare much better if they were housed and interacted with in ways that are a lot more appropriate for their species and more in line with their behavioral and psychological needs. And that means to me a much bigger and more complex cage, as well as proper socialization with humans, where they get some free range time outside of the cage and some playtime with their human caretakers.
Well, thank you so much, Joanna, for sharing with us some of these findings about rat cognition and behavior in laboratory settings. It was mind-opening to me. You can find out more about this study by going to the link we have posted at animalvoices.org. Thanks, Joanna.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that was a very interesting interview. Lots of information there. What did you all think of Joanna's findings? That Magda, let's start with you.
Joanna did fail to mention that she won an award for that a study, so I just would like to say that. One of the things mentioned in the study was that they're not quite sure whether allowing them to have more natural behavior or environment, whether or not that will help in the actual experiments. I would say that that just goes to follow. A lot of rats are used specifically for behavioral experiments that are supposed to extend to humans. And when you have an animal that is, is in an unnatural environment, how can you gauge their behavior? It's like taking an inmate who's in solitary 24 hours a day and taking and saying, okay, this person's representative, his actions or reactions will represent the rest of society. You can't do that. They have to be rats to see how their it changes. The way they're kept, that's not natural. So their reactions to stimuli is not going to be natural.
Jerry, I'm wondering, how does it make you feel to know that the same animals you call your friends are killed by the hundreds of thousands each year and are researched on in this manner for lab research purposes?
Well, I feel that rats are really sentient creatures, and they're really not too much different from us biologically and the way their behavior is. And this does bother me, and I hope that there can be solutions that can be found in future.
Well, the reason that I wanted to put on this show for Rat Appreciation Day, as I'm calling it, is because we have such negative preconceived notions in our society about rats. Myself, I came into the show, I'm still a bit scared of rats. I acknowledge they're so cute, but later I'm going to get to know Hikari more to get over my silly little fear. So largely misunderstood. Veronica,
yes.
I'm wondering, have you been able to turn around people's preconceived negative ideas of rats when they've met and known your rats, especially through your Instagram account and Facebook?
Well, I'm still working on my mom.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just need some time. Like, your mom should have had time by now to get used to your rats.
I'm
right?
trying, but she's got, I mean, and she acknowledges it. It's a lot of just the stigma in society. Like, when I first brought them out, when I adopted them, they were like probably like 6 or 7 weeks at the time. I had them on my shoulders, and she just looked and she's like, oh my God. She's like, get them away from me. Their tails. Ew, their tails.
Yes,
I'm like,
tails. Oh,
and that's what it seems to be. So many people like they're cute, but their tails freak them out.
That's the
like,
best part.
Everybody loves squirrels. Squirrels are very similar, like looking to rats. They just have a furry tail, and we love furry animals. So, but my dad's girlfriend, actually, she was very frightened, very similar to my mom when she first met them. And I mean, she doesn't come over too often, but one of the last times she came over, she walked right up to the cage, and I was, talking to Bart in the cage, and she's just like, oh my gosh, he's so cute. She's like, look at his little nose. And she reached out, just like, no hesitation, just reached out and she started touching him. And I was like, wow.
So she's appreciating.
Yeah, I'm like, look at
this
change.
The beauty of the rats.
Yeah.
Because they are quite beautiful, I have to say.
Yeah, it's just getting to know them and building a bond with a certain rat and kind of seeing their personality and that they're not just these gross little rodents that run around in sewers and feed on garbage and spread disease, which is a total misconception too. So
we just have about a minute here, and I'd like to ask you, Jerry, and then Magda, what would you say to people who don't understand or know rats as the friends like you do, to start with Jerry?
Well, there are some people that are really steadfast in their mind that rats are bad, and I keep trying to tell them, look, no, they're not, and they don't believe me. But other people are more easy to turn around. But yeah, there's some people particularly at work, I can talk to them until I'm blue in the face, and they'll just, no, they're bad. They need to be, you know, all this. And then there's some people that do kind of turn around, and I appreciate that. And there's actually one other person at work who used to keep rats, but since the last one passed away, he's quite comfortable with his pet tortoise and, you know, a couple mm-hmm. other pets that he has.
And Magda, what would you like to say to people who don't understand or know rats as friends like you do?
I think people need to distance themselves from the wild rat image of rats. Yes, there's wild rats, and yes, they can do damage. We're talking about pet rats here, completely different. I mean, the same but different. They're friendly, they're smaller, they don't have the same disease that a wild rat may have. You know, both are very intelligent. I know of a lot of converts thanks to me and my rats. I quite often don't give people the chance not to convert. It's kind of here, love them or go away. So I think people just need to, you know, I get a lot of, oh, well, you know, they're in my barn and they're ripping up my horse feed or whatever. I get that. I understand. But these are wild rats, and they're doing what wild rats do. Here are companion rats. I feed them. I'm not going to let them into your barn to rip up your horse feed. So people really need to realize that they have been vilified for many, many years. And that view about the evil rat and, you know, the snarly rat, I mean, everybody can picture that in their mind. That's not what rats are. They don't attack people. They don't, you know, steal babies and things like
and
that.
They're actually quite loving and affectionate. They are, and make great companions.
Very intelligent.
Well, thank you, Jerry, Magda, and Veronica for coming on today's show. It's our rat appreciation show, and thank you for telling us about your lives with rats as companions and as sentient beings. To find out more about everyone who has been featured on today's show, please take a look at our website, animalvoices.org.
You have been listening to Animal Voices here on Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish territories. We here at Animal Voices would like to connect with you online. Please visit us on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, Twitter, Animal Voices YVR, and listen to past episodes on our website, animalvoices.org. Please join us next week when we'll be having Beverly Buckley and John Sakars on the show to talk about their unique methods of advocating for animals. Also, please do remember that this is spring member drive time, so do consider becoming a member of Co-op Radio. You can do that on our website, cooperadio.org, by calling the station or coming to the Wise Hall tonight for our birthday party. That's 8 p.m. at the Wise Hall. We'll leave you with a closing song called Remy Drives a Linguini from the film
It's my favorite movie.
From the Ratatouille, composed by Michael Giacchino. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you next week. And remember to be kind to the animals.